On the agenda is approval of the minutes from the December 6th meeting. Do I have a motion to approve?
Move for approval.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Our next item on the agenda is public comment. If you have a public comment to make, please come forward, state your name and address for the record, and you have 2 minutes. Is there anyone here for public comment?
Good afternoon. My name is Charlie Carmody. I live at 107 New Street in the Old Village of Mount Pleasant. And I'm here to talk about the limitations on hotels in the town of Mount Pleasant. I represent several families, longtime Mount Pleasant families that own real estate in the town. And one of those families owns the corner of Center Street and Ben Sawyer Boulevard, where Santee's restaurant is and where Page's Thieves Market used to be. The current zoning on that site does in fact allow a hotel, and we are under contract to sell the site to a hotel developer, a very well-known one who's done a great job in the town already, Bennett Hospitality. And as the site sits today, the hotel is a permitted use on that site. However, since we went to contract, the town is discussing changing the rules so that a hotel would not be approved on that site. I understand that the goal of the planning committee is to control development in the town so as to preserve the quality of life that makes us all want to live here, me included. I respect that goal. However, by changing the rules, you will diminish the value of the site that this long-term Mount Pleasant family has owned. We've gone through this before with other long-term Mount Pleasant families. I understand that the current zoning will change hotels from being a permitted use to a conditional use in all zoning districts. I respect that change, knowing that you want to have a higher level of control as to where and how many hotels get developed in the town. That's a good change. I also understand that the current proposal will limit hotels to locating in the town scale commercial zone and not be allowed in community scale commercial districts. The site at the corner of Ben Sawyer Boulevard and Center Street is designated to be in the community scale district. So if this change happens, a hotel will not be permitted on that site. If you change hotel development to be conditional use and not a permitted use in all zoning districts, you can gain a level of control that you need to limit hotels and what they look like in the town. I respectfully request that you limit the proposed change to making hotel development a conditional use instead of a permitted use in all zoning districts and not eliminating hotel developments in community scale districts as a blanket deal.
Thank you, sir. Your time.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here to speak?
Hello, my name is Michael Bennett. I live at 143 Triad Street, Charleston, South Carolina. I'm the one who has the Page's Thieves Market under contract. When we put it under contract, we were anticipating a hotel. I came in front of the same committee a few weeks ago or a month ago, and I do have renderings of the hotel. If that is important for y'all to see, I'd love to show them to you, but that's for y'all. You know, the idea that the mayor and city council has a conditional use is a good thing, right? And City of Charleston did the same thing with Mayor Riley many, many years ago, and it's a good thing. But to arbitrarily eliminate certain sites, I think, is not a good thing. A hotel use requires much less parking. There's a less traffic impact. There's a much higher valuation for the hotel, higher valuation for the city from a property tax perspective. I think at least 2-to-1 compared to office. And there are plenty of uses that could be built here that I think are not nearly as good as what we're going to plan on. A brewery, a funeral home, or a mortuary chapel. Y'all know all the things that are allowed under area-wide business. A bar, a nightclub, or a lounge. A convalescent home, a hospice facility, a hospital or medical campus. Anyway, I would like the opportunity to have the town and the town council decide the fate of the site versus taking it out of one of the districts and putting it into another district with a 80-room hotel, which I'm planning on doing. It would require 80 parking spaces plus whatever's required for the employees. If we built a 70 or 80,000 square foot office building there, it would require three times as many parking spaces. So I think there's less traffic impact. We've designed this building to be very reminiscent of the old village. It's all white clapboard, standing seam metal roof, porches on the side. Anyway, I just found out about this meeting about an hour ago. For some reason, I thought it was in a couple of weeks. Is that my buzzer?
That's your buzzer.
Thank you all for allowing me to come speak. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here for public comment?
Hi, Lucy Gordon, 1551 Ben Sawyer Boulevard. I did write a letter. It was a little bit hurried, but I have a couple other comments that I need to add in regard to hotels. And I'm coming from the perspective of a resident and somebody who lives on Ben Sawyer. So this is very familiar to me, and it has a lot of impact on me. I don't know what extent we need more hotels in Mount Pleasant, but the question of where they should be located is very critical. Ben Sawyer, as you know, we already get all the beach traffic back and forth to Sullivan's, all the residential traffic. We, in the not too near future, are also going to have the Atlantic, which is going to dump about 300 and more cars into Ben Sawyer at the very narrowest point. These are permanent residents and will have daily trips. Short-term rentals. Of all the short-term rentals that the town allocates for the entire town, most of them have ended up disproportionately in our general area. Partly it's popular, but partly a lot of the town has HOAs that prohibit short-term rentals, so they somehow ended up with us. So we already provide tourist accommodations in our general area. What people don't want and don't need are actually hotels and additional tourists. We are already dealing with this difficult situation. It's already congested. It's going to be more so. What we would want are things that we can actually use that would benefit our daily lives, that would allow us to work, live, play close to home, and not to bring in additional tourists into the area. That does not help us. So what my suggestion would be, you know, community commercial is supposed to serve the residents that are around the hub, community hubs. We do have large hubs that would be perfect for this kind of development that are to serve the whole town, and we have many of them, and they're distributed evenly throughout the town. So that is my suggestion for where such a hotel might be perfect.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here to speak for public comment? Last chance. All right, moving on. Time for public comment is closed. Moving on to item number 4 on the agenda, annexations, 4A.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Ms. Whitley and committee members. So we have two annexations for you today. The first one is at 1501 North Lakeshore Drive. It's about a half acre tract of land, and you can see here it's located, this is a future land use map which calls for a conventional residential neighborhood. It is located on the corner of North Palmetto Fort Drive and North Lakeshore Drive, so it's kind of situated between Liberty Hill Farms and Oyster Park. They are asking to come in with the automatic zoning based on our future land use, which would be R1. Single family residential, and there you can see the surrounding zoning is predominantly cultural landscape, but the R1 is certainly appropriate for a conventional residential neighborhood, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Move for approval.
Second. We have a motion to approve and a second. And actually, I'm so sorry, cultural landscape. That's the first time I've actually heard of the cultural landscape zoning is just now. What is
it? Yeah, we don't have a lot of it. What we do have predominantly is in this area. It's Liberty Hill Farms and Oyster Park, Oyster Point. And it is one of our basic zoning districts. But both of those developments did. In the cultural landscape, you're able to do a cluster development. So that's kind of what they did there. But most of it is right here in this area.
Okay, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Item B, annexations.
All right, this next one is at 1402 Marshwind Island Road, which is up off of Gurns Bridge Road. You can see it here. It's a rather large parcel off the marsh. It is in an area known as Woodville, and it's contiguous across the water to Wando Farms. The comp plan does call for rural residential, so it will come in with the automatic designation of rural residential. And I'm happy to answer questions. This one has a single-family home on it. The other one is vacant. So.
But this is 17 acres?
It is. It's a large parcel. A lot of it is marsh. But it is RR. You would be able to just to do single-family residence.
And yeah. Is it surrounded by the town? Or no, it's contiguous from
you can
across.
See zoning right there. So the sort of pink color, reddish color, that's R4, and then all of the yellow is R1, which is single family residential, but it's designated in that aqua there for rural residential, so it will come in as rural residential, which requires a higher density than single family residential. I think it's like one unit per 3 acres or something to that effect.
Mr. DeMora, for the services that the town provides to be provided to this parcel, is this something that is advantageous for us to annex? Is this part of the long-term plan to annex this entire section? I see we already have one section there. If we're already out there, is it not that big a deal to add servicing to another 17 acres? This is my question.
That's right. I would consider it neutral. That property has been in the town. It's shaped, well, whatever that shape, like a some kind of triangular piece. It's been out there for some time, over a decade. We're sending out vehicles, trash truck service vehicles there anyway, so it wouldn't be much of an impact on us at all to continue to service the property next to it. So it's, if there were no other properties out there, given the way you have to get to that property, I would voice more of a concern, but not right now.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions from the committee?
Yes, I do. Can you go back to the aerial, please?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Access to this property is off of Gurns Bridge Road, correct?
Yeah, it's actually, so Causey Road, so you have to go up Highway 17, Gurns Bridge Road to Causey Road, and then you're on Marsh Island.
What is the distance, as an example, from the new public services site to here?
I don't know. I'm not real sure.
15 miles?
I don't know if it's that much.
10 miles?
Maybe.
So to serve this one parcel of land, garbage trucks would have to travel 10 miles.
Well, yeah, but as Mr. DeMora mentioned, we already are serving the, so if you see the one in yellow, so we're already servicing this lot and this area. So we already, you basically go up, you have to go down Gurns Bridge, come down Causey, and then, so we're already coming down Causey Road.
And what's on the other two parcels?
Right.
What's on those other two parcels?
Oh, which two?
The ones, the ones you got arrows on.
Those are all residential.
And how many homes?
I'm not sure. I think they're all single family. The pink should be R4. Which is single family as well. So they're all single family residents.
Two houses?
One.
There's only one on the yellow.
One on the yellow.
One on the yellow and one on the others, I believe.
And how long have those other two been in the town?
15 years at least for the yellow piece.
So we're already out there anyway.
Yeah, that's why I considered it neutral. I mean, if you were opposed because you didn't want to proliferate or extend service provision, I certainly can understand. But if you were inclined to annex it, we're servicing it right now to begin with.
Okay. Do we have a motion from the committee?
If we're already out there, I'll go ahead and recommend approval, but that's a long way for our equipment to have to travel.
Mm-hmm. It is, but since we're already there, then I think
Exactly. The
plan is to annex. So, all right, is that a motion?
Move for approval.
Okay. I'll second.
We have a motion to approve in a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, moving on to item 5 on the agenda, review of Planning Commission recommendations. Item A is a request to rezone 3 MPW pump stations.
I'm sorry, just a housekeeping. Was Ms. Corley on virtually?
No, she's not.
She didn't make it. Okay. I thought we had added her on. I want to make sure we weren't leaving her off on our votes. Okay. So this request is for 3 pump stations for Mount Pleasant Water Works. They are currently all zoned residential. 2 of them are R1, 1 is R4. The first one is in Cooper Estates at the terminus of Cottingham Drive. The second one is Stewart Ingalls adjacent to Joe's Garage and Repair Shop, as you can see there. And the third is at Sawmill Court, which is actually out by the Beehive Tract near Theodore Road. This is really kind of an administrative cleanup. These parcels, they're all, the use is non-conforming because it's residential, but pump stations have been there for a long time. There is no intent to increase or intensify the use. The plan is to maintain them as pump stations. There's currently about 163 pump stations throughout the town, and this is more of a cleanup as the MPW, and there's a representative from MPW that can speak to this when it gets to that point, but as they start to work on different improvements to each of their pump stations, they're going to gradually come in and annex these into the town just to make it more clean, more efficient. And so these 3 are designated first up for some capital improvement programs through MPW's plan. And so these 3 are all currently proposed to have some improvements done. But the way it works now is our design review board would have to, if it's over $250,000, they would have to go through our design review board. And it doesn't make sense because DRB does not look at subgrade facilities or improvements. And so what this does is, it doesn't change any of the requirements for improvements. Any improvements or changes will have to meet our conditional requirements for a pump station, which include landscaping, a fence, all of these things. So regardless of whether they are zoned R1 or PI1, they're going to have to make the same improvements. It just does not require them to go through DRB, which doesn't make sense, and it can be done at staff level. It also gets them under the correct zoning district, and this is just an example of one that recently was upgraded on Major Street in Old Mount Pleasant. So you can see on the left, it had existed for quite some time. That's how it looked when they went to make improvements. We were able to require them to put up the fence, do some landscaping, and make it more aesthetically pleasing to the neighborhood. So you're going to see these coming in every so often as the timeline works with their timeline of doing improvements. It was too much to bring 100 in at once, and so they're just breaking them up per our request. And I do think MPW has a representative here if you have questions.
Ms. Hyde?
I was just going to say that I'd move to approve.
All right, we have a motion to approve. We have a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. All right, item B, an ordinance amendment to repeal zoning code Boulevard Overlay District.
Okay, I'm going to open this one up and then I'm going to turn it over to Peter to talk details for design. This is a proposal to repeal the Boulevard Overlay District. Predominantly, it's to repeal those portions that are per the comp plan we wanted to revisit, and to the expanded permitted uses, those sorts of things. And then the goal was to take those design standards that were desirable and that we wanted to keep and incorporate those back into our other commercial design review guidelines. Planning Commission did recommend denial as it was requested, and we'll talk about, Peter will go into detail about why they recommended denial and what they recommended specifically. Just a brief background. This is the Boulevard Overlay as it exists today. So you've got the red outline. It's predominantly AB, area-wide business, so you can see it in orange. And just real quick, you can see over the years, if you look February 2011, that's when the corridor as we know it today was established. There have been subsequent amendments probably 15. And if you go through each of these ordinance amendments, really none of them are pertaining to design guidelines. Almost all of them pertain to zoning and land use. So I think that kind of gives you an idea that the design guidelines within the Boulevard overlay have not really presented a problem over the years, and have in fact had some great benefit to what we see today. And all the way up through May of last year, where we were reducing heights, reducing densities, and those sorts of things. So with that, I am going to turn it over to Peter, and he is going to talk design.
Thanks, Michelle. So I think this would be a good opportunity to look at big picture, just features within the Boulevard Overlay District that we believe that council and committee are directing staff to retain. There's three features that I'd like to present on that we definitely would like to retain if directed to do so. And then there's also three things that we believe that staff or council and committee are directing us to repeal. So I'll cover those quickly. But first off, the main one would be the pedestrian activity zone. This is something that the developer is giving back to the town. Whenever we permit someone to build in the commercial in the Boulevard Overlay District, they're putting in street trees, pedestrian walkways, street furnishing, and it's a benefit to the town that we are not spending taxpayer money on it, but it's also a benefit to the developer. The commercial space now has pedestrian activity and foot traffic coming along the perimeter of that business. So this is actually a illustration from the Crab Report, the Coleman Revitalization Advisory Board in 2007, and it was called the Crab Report at the time, just to keep it succinct. So this is the first item that was covered. Second, commercial visibility is huge, and that actually, going back to street trees, for every property in the Boulevard Overlay District, 3 street trees are required per 100 feet. And that's opposed to, in our other commercial overlays, we have a 10-foot B buffer, which automatically requires 3 canopy trees, 5 shrubs, and 15 understories. So really, that's from day one, that's instant screening that prohibits viewing windows into commercial businesses. And so the idea was that with these street trees alone, we're automatically giving businesses, people viewing windows into these businesses. I think the economic development staff has done a great job at the direction of council identifying vacant commercial spaces that often, the reason these commercial spaces are vacant is because they don't have that marketability of, you know, that street presence and that visibility to the street. So this is something that we've identified that we need to retain and is a huge benefit. One of the unintended consequences of this is with the repeal of this would come about, well, at least for Chuck Dolly, just as a matter of hierarchy, the highway county overlay district would then apply to the Chuck Dolly properties. And so what we have right now is a property that a local business is looking to move their offices into a property off of Chuck Dolly, and right now it's heavily screened, and they would actually have to add more screening to it. The 15-foot Highway County Overlay District buffer requires street trees, a 15-foot buffer, and on top of that, all vegetation that is greater than 6 inches would have to be retained. So largely, they would be able to clear out vines and invasives, but this would be a pretty thick screening wall that they would have to contend with in opening up a business on Chuck Dolly. The ideal would be what we have with the street tree standards is giving viewing windows into these commercial businesses, and this is kind of framing it up and giving it a viewing window. Robert Gibbs, in his book Principal Use, or The Principles of Urban Retail, kind of covers that this actually attracts the eye to commercial businesses and actually increases foot traffic and business for people that have formed up and framed their commercial buildings in buffers like these. So it's been very beneficial. The final thing was the prohibition against big box stores within the Coleman Ben Sawyer, or the Coleman overlay specifically. So, for example, if tomorrow Moultrie Plaza were to sell and the Boulevard Overlay District were not there to prohibit this, potentially Costco could occupy that site and it would be required to meet the 20 to 30 build to. And so that would be fronting Coleman Boulevard. So that's definitely something that is in place now that we would, we've kind of had some direction to keep. Things that would be repealed, obviously I think it's pretty clear that permitted uses beyond the base zoning would need to be repealed. This inclusivity beyond the base zoning, it would just allow for more transparency and more clarity about what can be put on a site. And it would just be, if it's AB, it's AB use. If it's NC, it's NC. It's just going to fall back to base zoning. Another thing that was discussed at commission to be repealed was the mixed use requirement. So right now, in the Coleman overlay between Live Oak and Chuck Dolly Ben Sawyer intersection, there's a requirement to have restaurant, entertainment, or retail use at the ground floor. So that certainly is a requirement that a commission member brought up and saying, you know, we would like to limit mixed use that could bring in residential. Those are often synonymous, but it would really only be able to be single family or duplex residential with the multifamily moratorium. So that's an aspect. The other commission members brought up the fact that they actually prefer exclusive requirements, zoning requirements such as these, because it limits the zoning to its highest and best use, and that's what we would want fronting Coleman Boulevard. So, for example, if you're familiar with the Sea Island Auto site on the corner of Chameleon Coleman Boulevard next to Christ Our King, this was a conceptual plan maybe 3 years ago where a commercial car wash, single story, was not permitted just due to the mixed use requirements. So it was automatically not permitted. The final thing to be repealed would be the 20% reduction in required parking. That's something that probably should have gone with the 2015 repeal of on-street parking in the Coleman Boulevard overlay. And it's actually something that has roots in the 99 Shim Creek Village Overlay District, in which between Simmons and Shim Creek, DRB had the purview to reduce parking by 50%. So this is something that kind of has roots going back to 99. So if there are any questions or comments, we'd be glad to hear what direction you would like staff to take, and if we're tracking with you.
Ms. Hyatt? I think I'm just not clear about what would happen with mixed use and residential, that portion of it, what we would keep and what we wouldn't. I know.
Could you,
when you're talking about,
clarify?
They'll be required to do retail on the bottom, but are we still going to allow residential? I mean, is there going to be mixed use? I didn't catch what you were, when you were talking about the mixed use portion of where that would go.
Well, I think that's what we were asking you for direction. The commission, as Peter said, they were mixed on it. So they recommended denial of this request as presented. It wasn't that they were against the concept of it. They felt like, gosh, we're keeping more than we're getting rid of. Wouldn't it be easier to rename this section, keep it, instead of trying to figure out where it goes somewhere else? And so that was kind of their concern. Can we not just keep it, call it something different? And they are only commercial design review guidelines that pertain to these areas. So we would get rid of the expanded use and that sort of thing. But one of the things that they didn't really agree on was mixed use. On one hand, they don't want any commercial or on any residential. And on the other hand, they don't want a single-story car wash. So we, as Peter mentioned, as professionals and the highest and best use, we think the mixed use component is important so that you don't get a single story car wash on Coleman Boulevard by Live Oak. But we understand the concern about multifamily as well. And so I think what Peter was saying was, I think there's ways that you could limit it by still allowing mixed use, but we need that direction from committee. Commission, we got kind of, there were both sides to the mixed use requirement. So we are looking to you for direction as we move forward on whether to keep that and what it looks like.
Because then the only other option would be office or something upstairs if you didn't allow residential and then retail on the bottom or something.
Yeah. Mixed use doesn't always mean residential and commercial. It can mean different types of commercial, office, retail, those sorts of things. Or it could be mixed use. You could have retail, office on the ground floor, and you could have a 2-3 single family on top. It doesn't have to be apartments. So that's kind of the guidance we were looking for from the committee.
I think, yeah, I don't know how y'all feel. I think that maybe the density is more the concern than the use.
Mr. Chapman?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for all of the effort to go through and find these each individual addition. And that's what they are. They've been added to the overlay district. My question is, that being the case, since we have specific additions that have been made, why can't we simply remove the overlay district, include those activity zones and all that are there? Mm-hmm. And I'd also like to add a low country design of the buildings for the streets where we're removing the overlay district, which I think are Chuck Dolly, Coleman, and Johnny Dots. Am I correct?
Yes.
Those. So you could still have those streets as where the overlay districts currently are and have them by name, but the importance is to keep all of those specifically added issues, like the activity zones, like the curb cuts, and like the opportunity over the businesses for mixed use, and keep in particular, which is what I think we're trying to get at, the specific zoning, so that zoning is not mm-hmm. combined with a lot of other things. I think that's where we are. And I'm not, I'll look to my other committee members to see what their feelings are, but I think that's where we are. We want the streets that are listed, but we don't want some of the things in particular that have provided problems under calling it an overlay district.
Mm-hmm. So they rejected it as submitted. And what were the specific changes that they recommended that would make it palatable?
Well, they agreed with keeping the activity zone, the street trees, all that stuff. They just felt like it was more organization.
Okay.
Why are we deleting this whole section than to just disperse it elsewhere when we know when we're actually keeping more than we're getting rid of? We're really only getting rid of the zoning part for the most part. I mean, the parking and a few other things, but it's still going to be a lengthy section. And so I think their argument was, why are we doing it this way? Why not just keep it, call it something different instead of trying to figure out where it fits? But as far as the concept of going by the underlying zoning and all of those things, they were in complete agreement. The only thing they didn't appear to agree on was the mixed use requirement. And so that was kind of what we wanted to get your direction on. And for the density, I was thinking we can, that's going to be controlled through the comprehensive plan anyway. So mm-hmm. I don't think that would be an issue if we allowed mixed use. But I wanted to add that.
Well, again, that's where I'm coming from. Just call it the name of the street, Coleman Boulevard, Chuck Dolly, Johnny Dodds, but include those specific issues. We're doing the same thing, and I think we're doing what they suggested. Call it something different. Well, that's what we're doing. We're calling it by the street name. But I'd sure like to see Low Country Design included in requirement.
You know, I think the issue with mixed use is this concern over a shift towards adding as many residences to the footprint of Mount Pleasant as possible. And I think that's something that we want to avoid. I know that the comprehensive plan will guide this, but the comprehensive plan isn't implemented yet in the zoning code. And so my concern is if we permit mixed use and yet have not implemented the density restrictions in the comprehensive plan, that there will be a period of time in which overdevelopment can occur while we are doing the comprehensive overhaul of the zoning code, which I know will take place over the next couple of years. I see what the Planning Commission is saying as far as the structural concerns. And that was why I kind of described it before as like, it's sort of like Jenga. We're taking a piece out. We got to put the other piece in to sort of maintain the structure of this. So if we're not removing, if we're keeping most of it, then I think I'm trending towards agreeing with the Planning Commission and with Mr. Chapman that, you know, maybe we preserve this piece, remove the lesser things that we want to remove from it, kind of like the council did before, and rename it. I think that might be structurally more clear to rather than trying to like divide it all out and stick it in other portions of the code. I don't know, Ms. Hyatt, what do you think?
Well, I feel like from the beginning there was confusion by having an overlay, and that we felt like we just fell back to our
underlying zoning
and then kept pieces that we liked. I mean, to me, repealing the overlay made sense if that was the goal, was to just go back to the underlying zoning and keep development standards and design standards that we liked and parking. And I mean, what staff came up with, you know, makes sense to me, but rather than keeping it, because then we'd still have an overlay and we'd have underlying zoning and overlying zoning and all that, and mixed use. I mean, it seems like a lot of the pieces we didn't want would still be there.
Yeah, so 2 points. One is we've already implemented the density changes for the comp plan. We did that a few months ago, right, Liz? So that's taken care of. The densities that were recommended in the comp plan are now in our zoning ordinance. The second point is what we could do, and you know, we're trying to do an overall code rewrite as well. So what we could do is, as we move forward, just make this change of where we get rid of the expanded uses and those sorts of things. And then as we go through the full code rewrite, we, instead of rushing it, we keep what we want for the design criteria. And then, and it's not an overlay, it's just, well, it is an overlay, but it's just like our commercial design review overlay, which applies to every commercial property in the town. And what we could do is just reference in our design review guidelines that we have now, if you're on Coleman Boulevard, C section, you know, whatever, 156318. And so we could reference these design guidelines where we want them kept. And then as we do our code rewrite, we can kind of really be thoughtful in where they belong. But I think we have concerns that we're going to miss something. We're making so many amendments trying to put these design guidelines in, that I agree with the commission's perspective of keeping it, but I think we can do it short term, and then with the code rewrite, figure out where they belong as we reorganize the entire code anyway, which we're doing.
Another question I have is, are these design guidelines, when they're being implemented, would they have broader implications beyond Chuck Dolly, Johnny Dodds, and Coleman? Would they be design guidelines that would then extend throughout the entire town, and do we want that?
So actually, a lot of these started out in the Boulevard Overlay District and have slowly become adopted into the base commercial overlay district just because they've become so popular. So something like the 20 to 30 build-to line, that's something we use throughout town now. That started out in the Boulevard Overlay District. But it's something that that we'd like to do is create a special buffer yard section and be able to give DRB purview where they would say, okay, an activity zone would be suited in this location, and or no, this needs a 10-foot B buffer. But whatever direction or purview you think would be best.
Because I think if these are good things for the commercial areas, there's something that should be implemented townwide potentially. Or at least have the optionality townwide for DRB, like you were saying, for DRB to say, well, for this particular area, these design guidelines should apply. Don't you think?
Yeah, townwide. Okay. Yeah. So move forward as is.
Well, this is where I think that this committee may disagree with one another. because I think that if the outcome is unchanged and how it's done structurally, I don't. Whatever is most streamlined structurally, as long as the outcome is what we desire, I am comfortable with that. And I understand there's a psychological component to, like, repeal the overlay district. But if we are keeping 90% of it and we're taking away 10%, it makes more sense to take away that 10% than repeal the whole thing and add 90% back into the rest of the code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm. But I don't I just want to be sure that the result that we're getting is mm-hmm. the result that we desire. So I don't know how the rest of the committee feels.
I just feel like the time it's going to take to rewrite everything that what staff was doing was getting to it faster, I think, and having less confusion with overlays. But what I mean, I want to do, yeah, whatever's most expedient and to get to what we want, because while we wait, we get things we don't want. So I don't know, the fastest to me was to repeal it and just keep design standards of what we liked. I thought that's the mm-hmm. what we were coming to was the easiest thing to do.
Well, that's where I was going. All these were added to the Boulevard Overlay District. So if you take away simply the name Boulevard Overlay District and what ended up happening was combined zoning. And we don't want that. We want the underlying zoning, period.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm coming from. And the fact that we want the added items like activity zones and all, but we don't want the combined zoning. So if you can do that, the name overlay district in and of itself is confusing. If you simply have those added items added to Johnny Dodds Boulevard, mm-hmm. Coleman Boulevard, Chuck Dolly, as a way to define them, as well as Low Country Design, it's easier to understand,
mm-hmm.
not only for us, but also for the people who may be the developers,
mm-hmm.
also to the residents. So that's where I'm coming from.
So I think then we can just move forward with the way we advertised it, and we'll in the commercial design review overlay, we'll just call out Johnny Dodds Boulevard and insert in there. Okay, and it may be that everything needs to be rearranged later with our new code organization, but we'll just move forward with that per each boulevard. Because they are all going to be a little bit different. So, okay. And we are going to start studying the Low Country vernacular, the architecture that you're talking about. We are going to start exploring that. So,
thank you.
Okay.
So we don't need to move to do anything in particular?
Well, I do need a motion, and then we'd also like some direction on the mixed use still, whether or not you recommend keeping it
or not keeping it?
Well, I think that since the density is in place, then leaving it there, because I think what was stated earlier about not wanting like a one-story car wash is definitely true for that area. So, and then at this point, is it still sort of in progress, or is there need a recommendation to full council to move forward further? Is that what you need?
Yeah, just a recommendation, and we'll go to council next Tuesday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All right, we have a motion to send this issue to full council for approval as discussed at committee. And a second, any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, motion carries. Moving on to item C on the agenda, curb cuts.
All right, these next few text amendments were something that our zoning administrator brought forth as some things we continually deal with, and so he wanted to get these cleaned up. This first one is back before we had a transportation department, we were the planning department, we did, we have some zoning things in our zoning ordinance that really pertain to transportation now. And so this ordinance section was actually adopted before we had the department. All requests for curb cuts are reviewed through the encroachment permit process with the entity who owns the right-of-way. The town and SCDOT use the SCDOT ARMS manual. And so really having this curb cut separation requirement in the zoning ordinance is a little bit redundant. They need to go to the transportation department anyway for review. And so we just wanted to delete that section of curb cut separation and refer to our transportation department and then SCDOT requirements. And we're happy to answer questions you may have.
I think that's a good idea, Madam Chairman. The only issue, and I didn't quite read it, but in terms of the Planning Commission, that there should continue to be efforts to consolidate driveways. Where possible, to encourage strongly combining access to properties along our major arterial roads. And I know when I was on the Planning Commission, I tried very hard to do that. But to just say we're going to send this all to DOT and or the town's transportation department, which I know it's another name now, but I would still like to see something in our ordinances encouraging combining access along major arterials.
And Mr. Chapman, I think through the Planning Commission can be involved with that through, so this would be Chapter 156. I think through Chapter 155, when we have land development,
mm-hmm.
And they review the subdivision process, right. I think that that's where they would play a role in it through the LDRs and not necessarily Chapter 156. So we're not changing anything in our land development regulations or Chapter 155,
okay.
if that makes a difference.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Hyatt?
Oh,
Ms.
No.
Okay. So just to confirm, this is basically solving sort of a redundancy.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. Do we have a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Move motion and second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Moving on to item D.
This next one, if you'll recall, we have some old plan developments out there, for example, North Point, that we dealt with for several months that we cleaned up and we redid the whole PD. Well, we fixed that one, but there's other PDs out there that are older that, for whatever reason, they're zoned PD, but they didn't establish development standards. So we can look at their, when they call us and they say, hey, can we build an addition to our house? We pull their PD and we know it's zoned PD and they have their own ordinance, but there's no development standards. So we can't tell them what to utilize without going through that whole process again of either, you know, amending their PD or what have you. So this is a fix that would pertain to all PDs. And what it would do is just basically say, if you have a PD and your PD doesn't establish development standards, utilize the R1 single single-family residential standards. So that establishes setbacks where a planned development ordinance does not establish setbacks. And so we felt like this was an easier fix than going around fixing all our PDs at this point.
And just to clarify with legal, that's a legal way to impact every PD?
Yes, ma'am, it is. And as you've seen over history, we have many, not many, but a fair amount of these PDs that really just don't meet current standard mm-hmm. for various reasons. And our staff and then ultimately council is left in a position that we really have nowhere to correct them. And this at least serves a minimum in order to allow these properties to be compliant and allow staff to give them appropriate instructions without having council involvement. But ultimately, the goal is for all of these PDs to be brought up to standard on their own, but that is a very difficult process.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, do we have any questions from the committee? No? Do we have a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
We have a motion to approve in a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, moving on to item E, impact assessment.
All right, last cleanup is we have some criteria in our impact assessment ordinance that says you can't use phasing to get around an impact assessment. And that's covered, but what we are seeing are parcels that are still probably going to require an impact assessment. They are subdividing off before, so it's not necessarily captured under the project phasing, but what they are doing is subdividing. So say you have an 8-acre parcel, we would say you're going to, whatever you do there, you're going to probably have to do an impact assessment. So they're selling off 3 acres and with the hopes of developing that 3 acres separately so that you get around the impact assessment of looking at the impacts of the overall site. So what we have just written is that instead of just project phasing or development phases, you also cannot subdivide a larger parcel into smaller parcels, sell those smaller parcels off to get around doing an impact assessment. And so this is just kind of catching a loophole that we've noticed.
Great catch.
And I'm happy to answer questions.
All right, any questions from the committee? Do we have a motion?
Only question I have is similar to what Councilmember Whitley asked. From a legal standpoint, where we're telling a property owner he cannot subdivide and sell off a smaller parcel, we can do that. This has been reviewed with legal, I presume. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. We've reviewed it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Do we have a motion?
Move for approval.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving on to item F, the boutique hotels.
All right. You've seen this a few times. It's now went to the Planning Commission for review and recommendation. Again, they recommended denial on this, but I'll explain that more in a minute. It was as it was requested. So they weren't completely against the idea, but they wanted to see some things changed. Again, we have our 2019 comp plan that says community scale is appropriate for boutique hotels and town scale is appropriate for your standard scale hotel. So proposed was to implement this idea of accommodation zones that has been talked about. And so if you look at our principal use table, of course, we just had a final reading on the elimination of a boutique hotel in the neighborhood commercial. So that is no longer permitted at all in that zoning district. What this proposal would do was in the remaining districts where it is a permitted use, it would make it conditional. And then it would make it conditional based on our comprehensive plan. And so as was presented to the commission, a boutique hotel, for instance, would be conditional in AB only in those areas that are designated on the 2019 comp plan as community scale and in four specific areas, and those areas are designated on this map here. I've done a rough circle. And then the standard hotel or extended stay hotel would be conditional based on the comp plan and only those areas that are designated as town scale. The boutique hotel is also allowed on the Republic Tract up on Highway 41, and then the standard hotel would be allowed in the green, the town scale, and then the Patriots Point waterfront area. So this was presented to the commission. They agreed with the town scale part. There was some disagreement on why are we limiting boutique hotels more so than your standard Holiday Inn hotel. And I think something may have been lost through this process, and that is that if you look at where a hotel, motel, extended stay is permitted, we have not included that where that is allowed, also a boutique hotel would be allowed. And so I think that's something that Ms. Hyatt and I were talking about perhaps got lost through this process. But that was sort of their concern, was that why are we limiting boutique hotels to these four specific areas? But then you're allowed to have I'm not picking on Holiday Inn, but your standard hotel in more designations than you would a boutique hotel. So that was our primary concern. And so I'm happy to answer questions or discuss that further.
All right. Do we have anything from the committee? Ms. Hyatt?
Yes. I don't think it was ever our intention to leave boutique hotels out of the town scale. I mean, I just thought hotels in general would be allowed there.
Yeah.
And then when it came to the community commercial hubs, as the comp plan chart shows, that boutique hotels would be reasonable in some of those areas. So the areas that we pointed out were designated in the comp plan as community commercial hubs. So that's where it came from. It wasn't really erroneous. It was based on our comp plan recommendations. So,
Mr. Chapman?
I'm still not... I guess I'm not understanding the Planning Commission's changes or suggested changes. Is their only suggested change just making sure boutique hotels could go where regular hotels could go, or am I missing something in their review? I mean, I read the minutes of their meeting, and I sort of got lost.
The town council was that same night, and I was running back and forth. Peter, do you recall any specific concerns? Or I think it was just they felt like it was too limited for boutique hotels. Like we were being, these regulations were harder on a boutique hotel than a standard hotel.
Correct.
That's kind of...
Yeah. It was very exclusive of boutique, but then very inclusive of the, a larger standard hotel. So that was a concern.
Ms. Hyatt, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't agree. I mean, we limited those to the town size hubs. So big, large hotels were being, limited to certain accommodations areas. But we, like I said, we didn't intend for boutiques not to be included there. This was more of an idea to expand it, because our original conversation was to have accommodation zones in town size scale redevelopment centers. And then we never really talked about community commercial. So then we added this. We wanted to make sure that boutique hotels were discussed and included, and that they would be in the right sort of major intersections that are on the comp plan as community commercial. I mean, those areas are meant to serve the community, and the way our ordinance is now, anything AB can be a hotel. But I think our comp plan suggests that we narrow it, and that's where all this came from. But yeah, boutique hotels were always meant to be, they'll be fine in the town scale redevelopment.
So Ms. Hyatt, based on what we discussed, you'd have you could have boutique hotels where any of the arrows are, and then you also mentioned 41 and
yes,
Highway 17 getting
out.
Missed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So based on that perhaps that change, then a boutique hotel would be allowed in these other areas, if that was desired moving forward.
My next question would be, these hubs are, you know, they're these pinwheels on the map on the comp plan. Defining the borders of those, as far as some are very obvious, like at Seaside, that entire commercial area seems covered, and at Bell Hall. But I wondered if we needed to define a boundary, or if we have, or if they are already defined, as far as how are we defining our commercial scale hubs? I mean, where do they start and where do they begin? I see the pinwheel, but then you've got meandering business past that.
Yeah, I think
mainly that intersection, or
I think, as you mentioned, I think the boundaries of the community scale for IOP Seaside is pretty clear. Bell Hall is pretty clear. Highway 41, Highway 17, I think we could have some boundaries so that it wouldn't creep up Highway 17, you know, unintended. And then, like you mentioned, I think the Chuck Dolly intersection is probably where we would need to draw some, because the community scale is obviously, as you can see, the red is parcel, but the pinwheels are not. Mm-hmm. And so I think we could draw some boundaries based on where the community scale drawings are, just to make it clear. Yeah. We just wanted input on that. Staff didn't want to do it.
Well, I think having the defined, like a black ring or a black, you know, definition around not just the community scale, but also the town scale hubs would be useful to see together on a map, is the definitions of the town scale and the definitions of the community scale, and then highlighting, so they're up here in this town scale one up in Carolina Park, there's also a community scale hub there as well, which I would think would be included in the boutique hotel. So looking at the map I have, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 community scale hubs on the map, and this would just limit them to 5 of them, so 5 of the 8. And in keeping with the comp plan, which says a typical use could be a boutique hotel, I think that what we're really doing here is making a decision about what Mount Pleasant is going to be long term, because Charleston is getting very built out with hotels, and we sort of are the bleed over right now for tourism in the Charleston area and in the islands. People stay in Mount Pleasant to visit the islands. They stay in Mount Pleasant to visit Charleston. There are, you know, we've got Patriots Point, we've got Boone's Hall, but generally speaking, people stay in Mount Pleasant as sort of like a more budget-friendly option to visit the islands and to visit downtown Charleston. Hotels bring revenue to the town. They help our citizens in the sense that the taxes that we pay are lower because we have tourism dollars coming into the community that help support our basic services that we provide. But that has to be balanced against the needs of the residents themselves, which we live here. And did we, you know, if we wanted to live in a tourism mecca, we would have moved downtown. We wouldn't have lived in the town of Mount Pleasant, which is community-based and residential-based. And there's our local elementary schools that our kids go to. Our kids bike around the neighborhoods and fish in the ponds. And that's, so I think that we have to really think as we move forward, what is the balance here? And by limiting hotels to these zones, we are saying, you know what, yes, we do need, like every community needs hotels when people come to visit, you know, they need a place to stay or family comes or whatever, but we don't want it to be something that is pouring traffic on our streets, taking over our parks, things that are for our residents and our community, but at the same time balance with what are the alternatives. If we restrict hotels to these zones, what are the other area-wide business, like what are the other, like all the rest of this that is not hotels? Oh, I just drew that. what is the rest of that going to become, and what's left? Because everything that we eliminate from zoning then incentivizes building of something else. And so I think that these are all questions that we need to really think through as we move forward with this. All right. Mr. Chapman?
On the same map that Councilmember Whitley was looking at, it appears that there is a community hub on Ben Sawyer near McCants. Am I wrong?
That's Oyster Park, which is a PD.
Right, but the there, if you're just talking about the red, it does go down. So, right here. Well,
yes, ma'am.
Right there.
Yes, ma'am. How far does that go down?
Just to where it's shown, which would be on, is it McNeil?
There are two, there's the Hub at Sea Island and there's the hub down, further down.
That's the one I'm talking on, the one further down.
Okay.
That's the one further down.
Yeah.
And that goes to where?
We didn't define exact boundaries for
right.
that.
And this was given to us by comprehensive plan, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure I was reading it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And that goes to what Mrs. Corley said. There are eight, and that this is proposed to have them in five. So it's like almost all of them. But, you know, saving some of these community areas for services for the citizens. And these were major intersections that made a lot of sense. Like, you know, the Chug Dolly, Coleman, for instance. I mean, there's access there. That's, you know, three streets. They could go to the beach. They could go to Shim Creek. They could go to Isle of Palms. Get on, you know, it just is really good major intersections to have hotels. So.
Okay. So then add in the 4117 intersection, mm-hmm. define these boundaries, and then where there's a hotel, motel, or extended stay allowed, there's also a boutique hotel allowed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Correct? Okay.
Yeah. Now, so also the Carolina Park neighborhood commercial as well, because that kind of bleeds into the town scale one, but I just want to make sure they're both included.
For the town scale or community scale also?
The community scale also, because there's a community scale right next to the town
right.
scale.
Okay, so you want to add that?
You want to show
right here, there. This red right here?
Or here, I'll just give you this map.
Okay.
This has everything
right.
circled.
She made circles.
She made circles. That would be five of the eight.
Got it, okay.
Now, as far as the boundary for the hub at Chuck Dolly.
Yeah, I think I would like to see where the staff comes back with those boundaries, and then we can always adjust those boundaries once we see them.
We can present that, have that next Tuesday, have some boundaries.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes. So,
all right, do we need a motion?
To send this to council on Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
As right. recommendations?
Do you have a motion?
Yeah.
So I'll move to send it to council. I might have something at council.
Okay. We have a motion to send to council.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Moving on to item G, stormwater management guide.
This is Kevin Mitchell's going to present this.
Good evening, members of the committee. This is a stormwater regulation update. It was presented to the Planning Commission by Ms. Marissa Pulteney, one of our engineers, last month. Planning Commission recommended full support of this. This is pretty straightforward. It's just updating our existing Old Village Builder's Guide. A little bit of background. The Old Village Builder's Guide pertains to single-family lot stormwater management plans. It provides criteria and standards for them to meet. Prior to them receiving a building permit, a special stormwater management area was created back in 2018 that followed the study by our engineers, by our consulting engineers in 2017, identifying this area as a drainage basin for the Old Village. It's approximately 975 acres. The Old Village Builder's Guide pertains to every single family residence located within the red boundary. Just as a area of interest and a perspective here, the lower blue boundary is the Royal Basin drainage currently under construction right now. The upper is the Edwards. Both are about 130 acres apiece. That is a major infrastructure project. But this is this regulation only relates to the single family residence, and I just provided that just for your interest there. The regulation was adopted in 2018. It's been very successful in supporting staff when we have smaller homes turning into larger homes, when we have a lot of grading, fill, that sort of stuff, when when there's not adequate outfall. So it's been very successful in helping managing and guiding property owners as well as builders and their engineers and ensuring there's not going to be an impact to as a result of their project. Some of the updates to this, like I said, this has been adopted 3.5 years ago, so we've worked with a number of engineers and a number of builders throughout this time, and there's some certain things that we'd like to improve on. One is the discouragement of the black flexible perforated pipe. We've never really seen that being used properly. It has a very limited lifespan. We'd like to have better topography information. Also, as these houses get bigger, pools, sheds, things of that nature, the stormwater detention facilities tend to get pushed more towards the boundaries of the property. So we want to make sure there's good, adequate separation from the property lines to, like, say, underground detention. So we don't have those type of particulars in our regulations. So that's something that we would like to have as a 2-foot separation from all property lines. Also to improve some of the existing conditions that are being identified, also in post-development conditions as well. We're seeing a lot of underground detention facilities. We want to make sure there's regulations that that relate to the groundwater table and providing good information where the groundwater table is, also incorporating a factor of safety of 2 for the infiltration rates that are being provided. And very importantly, to have the engineers provide photo documentation during the construction of underground detention, because we get called out and it's completely built. So we not 100% sure if it was actually built per plan, and a 24-hour notice. Also, the last one, number 6, is to improve consistency and a more conservative method of calculating your peak discharge rates for each of the sites. The last thing we would like to update and include in the regulation is the tree appendix. We have 2 field inspectors. One is a certified arborist, the other one studying to become a certified arborist. They've created this tree appendix. And essentially what this is just a quick handy guide for homeowners and builders what to do when you need to remove a tree, how to properly go about pruning a tree, how about properly going about developing inside the tree protection zone, things of that nature. It doesn't, our regulations currently don't exist, don't have this included. This will be a helpful handy guide for them to move forward with answering tree questions, things of that nature. So these proposals are only to enhance and make the regulations that we currently work with better.
Right. So. Thank you. Sure. Do we have a motion or any questions?
I'll move for approval, but I have a question.
All right, we have a motion to approve.
A second.
Second, we are in discussion. Mr. Chapman.
Now, under discussion, what can a property owner do without getting a permit? And the reason I'm asking this is if someone was to put in a deck to for cookouts and things like that, they're going to take property that currently has pervious surface, make it impervious, a square footage, let's just say 10%. How do we have the ability to, if we do, to review that? What is the percentage of surface on the property where they, you know, had to go through a lot of review to get a permit to build that property, and they choose on their own to make changes that reduces the ability of that land to have runoff?
The question is about runoff. Tracking and monitoring the impervious surface, the expansion of impervious surface, if a homeowner moves forward without a permit versus the normal process of someone getting a building permit, because that's the building permit right now is how we how we regulate it. Once we withhold the building permit until they have their stormwater calculations, their stormwater plan ready, and then we release the building permit after we've inspected the site. So if I understand your question is, what do we do if we come across someone that has improved their property without the permit?
Correct.
Yes, sir. Well, it turns into an enforcement situation. We would first step would be, you know, contact the owner, try to create an after the fact permit. They may not be aware of the situation, things of that nature. But if it's done by a contractor, then we would, of course, maybe take it to the next step, issue possibly a citation. But the first point we would like to do is just try to make it correct and give them opportunity to have an after the fact permit, offset, mitigate any impacts that are occurring as a result of their improvements. But then after a while, then it would ultimately end with possibly a citation at that time. And then they would have to go before the court system. That's only happened one time since the 3.5 years that we've been.
Thank you. But,
Kevin, if I may to Mr. Chapman, we've also put in place a process where most people call the building inspections department and they ask, here's what I want to construct. Do I need a building permit? And they'll submit plans. And even if it doesn't meet the threshold of a building permit, we do look at it for zoning, and stormwater takes a look at it too, if it's depending on what it is. But so we're trying to capture things that may not necessarily require a building permit through as a kind of a loosely termed zoning permit process. It's just, and stormwater will look at that as well. But we do kind of have a process where we try to catch things even if they don't require a building permit, if that helps.
Well, it does, but I've seen places where somebody doesn't want to mow the grass in their backyard and they choose to bring a concrete mixer in and have a nice large deck as well. So I was just curious. You'd probably have to get notice from adjacent property owner, but I was wondering if there was a...
Yeah, we wouldn't have any way of knowing it unless somebody called, and then we would investigate it, and if they didn't get a permit, then we would give them a chance to have an after-the-fact permit.
Right.
And if that fails, then we would move forward to the enforcement. But within the regulation itself, there are different, there's categories. So right. If there's an addition, a deck, and that's a simplified plan. It doesn't require an engineer. So, right. A full-blown redevelopment, tear down and rebuild, that would require a civil engineer.
And that tear down and rebuild, they're probably not going to do it themselves. They're probably going to have an engineer, architect design it, and those people are going to go do the permit thing. I'm just talking about the homeowner who has a reason, like they don't want to mow the grass.
Yeah.
At any rate, I just want to know if we had a mechanism other than the adjacent property owner, say, contacting you. And it sounds like we don't, but probably doesn't happen very often.
Probably doesn't. But we can't catch every little thing. But
thank you, Mr. Chapman. The question that I had is, this is restricted to the geographic area that was defined earlier, right? The stormwater management area. Are these guidelines or things similar to these guidelines something that you feel should be implemented on a broader scale in the town? Or is this specific to the Old Village simply because of the it's an older development and didn't have kind of the proper drainage built into it from the beginning?
It's a great question. This is part of a special stormwater management area, which ties back to an engineering report. And that within that engineering report, just about 95% of all infrastructure within this area was deemed inadequate, doesn't have enough capacity. So any expansion of impervious surface would ultimately impact someone downstream. So there's an engineering link between the overall larger study to the old builder's village guide, which takes it a higher regulation. It's almost like a commercial property of comparing pre and post and ensuring that your post-development discharges doesn't increase your pre, which would ultimately impact someone downstream. But this regulation links back up to an engineering, a broader engineering study, which we don't have, you know, town-wide. So that's where we are today with this. Now, could it be applied throughout? Of course, it could. Would it be necessary? Not if there's adequate outfall. Somebody's on the marsh. You're not going to be impacting anyone downstream. So this regulation is just to protect neighbors and folks within that particular area.
Gotcha. Do we have any, I believe we have a motion and a second on the table. Is that correct? So do we have any further discussion or questions? We're ready to vote? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, moving on. As we move on to item number 6, which is an overview of the Settlement Community Task Force final report and recommendations, I want to thank the members of the task force who are here. I want to thank those that are not here for spending the past year of their precious time working on this report. I'm so thankful for the efforts that they placed into this and into this final report. And thank you also to Liz Boyles for heading up the meetings throughout the year. My plan is that we have an overview today, but I believe that the report has prioritizations or just different segments of the report, and I don't want to give any part of the report short shrift. So my hope is that we can address these in a very systematic way over the course of this next year through the planning or the next few months with this committee, so that we address every item that is on this task force final report. So with
fantastic.
That, Liz.
Thank you. I am so excited to have this opportunity to finally bring you this report from the Settlement Community Task Force, as you just mentioned. Can I control that? I'm not used to having this. This is great. Okay. As you mentioned, we've been meeting for the past year monthly to look at issues that the community members themselves identified in our first meeting that impact their communities. We went through and had kind of topic-specific meetings pretty much each month to make sure that we dove into, for instance, issues of taxation or issues of drainage, other infrastructure roadway issues, and we had the Center for Ayers Property come out to talk to us about Ayers property issues. Just, you know, we did a lot of fact finding and a lot of discussion of what needed to happen to make life better within the communities. Throughout this process, we also assembled recommendations for future policy and actions that would make be important here at the local level, but also potentially at the state and federal levels. There are some things contained in here that would be more relevant on those levels. Kind of a brief outline of the issues that were identified is up here for you. So we had infrastructure issues that focused primarily on drainage, sewer, and transportation issues. We had issues or topics to discuss of economic disparity, looking at housing costs, the denial of investment opportunities for both private property and community properties within the broader settlement communities, and the idea of improving local business support for local businesses within these communities. Cultural integrity, of course, is an important aspect to consider when we're looking at these historic resources within the town. So we looked at cultural preservation angles, zoning decisions, and how they impact on the communities, and also the need for improved community coordination between what's going on at the town level and the county level, and then, you know, getting community input. I neglected to mention at the beginning that throughout this process, we also had members of Charleston County Planning staff in attendance at every meeting. We've got a couple representatives here today who have been, you know, following this closely, because most of these areas, as you're well aware, are still within Charleston County. So this whole conversation affects the town, but of course it also affects the county. And we have been talking about looking forward with our zoning code rewrite, of course, implementing these, you know, some of the ideas that came up from the zoning conversations specifically in conjunction with the county in the different zoning classifications that impact these areas. Excuse me, can't talk today. So forgot to mention the county earlier, sorry. Property ownership, titles and taxes. We talked about being able to maintain property ownership is because it's, I mean, if you don't have the property, then it's, you know, and the issues that result from those challenges. I've got in here all of our recommendations. I know you don't want to go through each one of them line by line. We talked about as a committee, task force, whether we wanted to make a prioritization. These are our top five most important issues. And the answer was no, they're all important. We can't just pick five of them that, you know, because they all need to be addressed. If they made it into the list, that was their recommendation. So we have recommendations dealing with infrastructure. That was, excuse me, drainage and sewer, transportation, and then just working our way through that list of the broad categories. I know that the committee members, the task force members, would appreciate the opportunity to have these, you know, conversations with y'all to explain their recommendations to you. That came up any number of times throughout the course of the year, just the need to have a full conversation with council about this is why this is important. These are the implications of not doing this or doing that. I'm grateful that so many of the committee members, task force members, I don't know why I keep doing that, all of the committee, the task force members were able to be here today. I know that meeting in the middle of the day is a challenge, as you're well aware, for people who work elsewhere. So I know they would appreciate that opportunity, as you referenced, Ms. Whitley, to have kind of more in-depth review and conversations about these recommendations. Would you like me to go through these, the various slides, or with the recommendations?
Yeah,
or
no, I mean,
is there anything?
We're here for the overview,
yeah.
So just
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't quite sure which level overview. So denial of investment opportunities, the ability to for members of these communities to obtain funds and grants and that sort of thing. Local business support related to actual individual member businesses within the communities and in the greater Mount Pleasant area, the need to support businesses within these communities. Cultural preservation. We talked a lot about how the communities can access grants. And part of the idea was, you know, if the communities, if the Gullah Geechee communities are recognized federally, then is that an avenue for future grant opportunities? So we talked about that and what that would take. Zoning decisions, of course, we've had a number of conversations about that over the years, about the way that zoning decisions, both in the county and in the town, impact on the remaining settlement community and how we can best address that, those challenges. And so we talked about land uses, we talked about lot sizes, we've talked about how to protect when we have an overlay district, make sure that overlay district is implemented as intended. Let's see. Community coordination, again, as I said, that the need to make sure that everybody is aware of things that are going on within the communities or proposed, whether it's within the community or near the community, that so there is an opportunity for input. I think a lot of times, you know, there's so much information out there that things get lost in the shuffle at times. And how can we better improve our outreach, not well, with members of the communities, to make sure that everybody is aware of their ability to weigh in on a project. And working with the or looking at the titles and taxes again, those are kind of out of the town's hands per se, because we don't administer really any of that, and you know, we're not in charge of any of that. But looking at perhaps ways to work with state officials to see if there are any changes to state law that could perhaps benefit members of the settlement communities through dealing with heirs property and that sort of thing, to enable them to better be able to hold on to their properties as conditions around them change. And so those are our 69 recommendations in a nutshell, I suppose. And I don't know if you had any questions at this point, or how do we want
thank you very much for this presentation and for that extensive list from the committee. I think that what will be something for us to define is really what can the town do. What can the county do? What can the state do? And what can the town support as far as the county and state level sort of things that are happening? I mean, one of the things that jumped out to me was the whole like an open house at town hall where we connect community services to community members. That seems like something that could easily be put together and done, or done in conjunction with one of our townwide events, like the Sweetgrass Basket Festival or something like that, where we could have those resources available there. I think that I need some time to deeply go through this. I don't know if the other members of the committee have comments. Well, Mr. Chapman?
I've got a couple of questions. Sure. First of all, during the meetings, and I noticed the issue, and which has been a problem for many years, of the heirs' property.
Yes, sir.
Were there any representatives from state legislature brought in to help maybe craft a piece of legislation that could go before the General Assembly this year to help with that?
That's a good question. We did not bring anyone in for that purpose, but we did have at the very beginning of this process, Representative Moore from District 15 reached out to, when he, I guess, heard that we were doing this, said, okay, what are your recommendations? Well, at the beginning, we didn't have any recommendations at that point, but with your permission, I'd like to be able to share this report with his office, because there are some things in there that might give him some direction from the group.
And I know Senator Sin, who yes. has been very active in the Drainage Committee
yes,
for
sir.
The legislature.
Yes, and we have
probably like to see this.
Yes, thank you. We have actually, as part of our drainage conversation, we had an evening with the county, the town, of course, and SCDOT staff came to one of our meetings, and we talked specifics. Community members brought in pictures of areas that were problems, and we sent everybody off with a list, basically. Through that process, in those conversations, we became aware of the task force that Senator Sen has put together that works throughout Charleston County and brings these different bodies together to deal with drainage issues. Of course, most of their work has been done in Senator Sen's district, is my understanding, just because she started it, but it also covers all of Charleston County, so the Mount Pleasant area as well. And we have submitted, I think, at least one request so far to that committee. But we decided it's in there in those recommendations that since that framework was already established, that in the county and the state were already working together with the municipalities through that process to solve these problems, why try to recreate the wheel when they've already got a framework set up? So we've been working with that system, and we're trying to get our issues, or if you will, our particular problems submitted into that process so that they can then be part of what's being solved.
And my other question is, were there any sites specifically suggested for workforce housing? And I bring this up because, you know, the town just purchased a piece of property with no adopted use of it. There have been a lot of things thrown out, but I haven't heard workforce housing. So I'm throwing that out as a possibility.
Sure.
On that site, on Faison. We've got high schools around there. We've got a hospital around there. Certainly is a good central location for workforce housing. And we've got workforce housing that we're looking at as part of the town, supposedly. Sure. So it's a distinct possibility, I think, and might not, if the task force had any properties that they could suggest, we'd be glad to hear them. But I know one in particular that certainly a good possibility.
Thank you, Mr. Chapman. I neglected to also mention that Ms. Fugo from Housing for All Mount Pleasant was at most of our meetings, if not all of them. And we've had a lot of conversations about that problem within the Mount Pleasant area. A lot of the communities didn't necessarily say on this particular property would be a great place for it, but they've all said we want it within our communities. We didn't look outside the communities just because that was outside of our purview. Sure. You know, we were looking at the settlements specifically. But I know that Ms. Fugo has been working with members of the communities individually and directly to identify properties within the communities as well as, I think, elsewhere. Specifically in the 6 mile, 7 mile Hamlin area, I know, but others, Snowden as well, and other areas, I know she's been talking with individuals about that.
Thank you.
Can we get a copy?
A copy of your presentation? Can it be emailed or?
Sure.
Full council.
My understanding was that you had the report.
Do I have it? Is there a link? On the agenda? Is it linked to my agenda? Because I didn't see it.
But I'll make sure that you have it. I'm sorry, I thought you did already.
Yeah, I'll have to look.
My apologies.
I may not have seen the link. I saw a lot of things in there look good and look like things that we could look into. One thing I saw was the historic designation. I've thought about that many times, that might be a way to protect these communities that they're kind of afraid to annex into the town, but to me, that might be a way to protect the integrity of the community and have them come in as being part of the town in some instances. So,
yeah, and I think for me, one of my concerns is we want to protect the integrity of the community, yet at the same time, not restrict people who are property owners in this community from economically benefiting from their land. I mean, I think that there's a large percentage of the community that's very sort of land rich, but cash poor. And the opportunity, I think, for partnerships through something like a Housing for All and with for potential workforce housing or for enabling members of the community to become, you know, owners of, you know, renting out properties and workforce housing, that kind of thing, would be a positive thing. I think that what we have to balance the need for preservation of these communities with also allowing people who live in these communities to benefit from their land.
Mm-hmm. I think that's,
yes,
hit the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's and again, I want to preface this all with this is not easy. This has been, you know, these communities have been here long before, you know, Mount Pleasant is what it is today. And I think that they are a very special part of this community. And I think that it is our, whether they are in the town or not, they are in the town's footprint, and how they develop are going to have a huge impact on the greater community and cultural our cultural core. So I think this is, these are very important issues that, that we need to spend and give the amount of time that it deserves, especially given the amount of time that the members of the task force spent putting this report together for us.
Yes, ma'am. So,
thank you.
I want to thank Councilmember Whitley for putting this all together. She brought this to council. We thought it was a great idea, and by reaching out to the settlement communities, I think it's a first step in trying to work together for a better community.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Do you do? Is there anything further from the committee? All right. That concludes item 6 on the agenda. Thank you so much, Liz. And the last thing is to adjourn. We are adjourned.